It was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Beringer, I buy Cabernet, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle. And welcome to podcast number 68. This month, we revisit the Fokker Isla family estate and talk to Alex Isla, successor to his father. Cheers.
As Napa Valley's resurgence since Prohibition grows, several second and third generation family members have stepped into leadership roles to move wineries into the future. Alex Isla is among those leaders, taking the helm from his father, Fokker Isla, at Fokker Isla Family Estate in Napa Valley. Having grown up in wine country, Alex has a classic winemaker's story of family, work ethic, and love of the land. Best of all, Alex makes you feel very comfortable and is easy to laugh, making for a great interview. It's worth noting that we originally interviewed Fokker Isla for podcast number 43 in October 2011, and you can find that program on the Life Between the Vines archives.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Nice to see you again.
Well, once again, we are here with Alex Isla. I shouldn't say once again, we're here again, because this is the first time we've been able to see you at the winery at Fokker Isla Family Estate.
Thank you.
So our listeners would remember that we spoke with Alex's dad, Fokker, at this very room. And Alex's dad has amazing history in this valley, not just for the fact that he's been farming here for such a long time, but of course he's made change in this valley that's very important. We were talking about when he moved here, this whole idea of this motorcycle track opening up and how he helped make change so that this pristine area would not get, for lack of a better word, polluted by development. So, how you doing, Alex?
I'm doing well, Ray. How are you? Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. So, you've grew up here, basically, right?
Absolutely, yep. Since 1974, I have roamed these vineyards.
74, how old would you have been at that time?
I was 5 years old.
Okay, just trying to get an idea of where did you end up going to high school? Or
St. Helena.
So you're at St. Helena?
Yes.
Okay, so that was the whole bus thing up this way.
Yes, had to take the long bus ride down the windy road to St. Helena every day.
These bus drivers must have had eyes the size of half dollars. I was up at the Oakville Grade the other day, and I love seeing these signs, you know, bus this, bus that. It's like, no, buses don't go on these roads. That's impossible.
That's what many people think. And, you know, put the bus on the road and then some cyclists, and it can be a dangerous combination. But we never experienced any accidents whatsoever.
I'm really glad to hear that. That's why you're here to talk about this today. That's why I'm here to torture you by putting a microphone in front of you.
Much appreciated, Ray. Thank you.
I can't think of a better place to raise a son, to raise a child, a daughter, than in this area. It's stunning. It's beautiful and obviously extremely rural. So what was it like for you?
You know, it was really a fantastic experience growing up. Every summer, I would have a good friend, cousin of mine come from Germany, and we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day with my grandmother laying in the sun and playing lifeguard. And so we would swim, fish, you know, roam the vineyards, play with poker with the vineyard workers, and just had an assortment of fun. One thing that really sticks out in my mind is that whenever we misbehaved, we were punished by having to walk up and down the vineyard rows and collect rocks and buckets for a certain amount of hours, depending on what we had just done. But it was a all in all a terrific experience, building forts, tree houses, you know, driving tractor at the age of 6, playing with the vineyard equipment, a terrific experience growing up here. You know, that will forever stick in my mind. And what was interesting to me is actually how you learn to understand how the soil really always moves. We would clean these rows of rocks, and a year or 2 years later, there would be rocks on the surface again. And you can tell that the soil is always rotating because there are new rocks coming to the surface.
You don't think about that, do you? You
know, no, I don't.
They got to come from somewhere, and that's
they got to come from somewhere.
And water moves everything, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and I would think that we were finally finished, and lo and behold, we would have more work to do. So
they just come up out of the ground from somewhere.
I think what's really great, though, is before the interview, we were walking through the vineyard, and you're talking about now you have a son, and rather than daycare, you're bringing your son out here, and you're letting him be exposed to this. Your son's 1, I believe you said, right?
Yes.
Again, what a great way to grow up and now kind of hand that down.
You know, it's a terrific experience. I think that I'm fortunate to be in the position that I'm able to take him to work with me, and what better experiences for him than to be exposed to, number one, German, number two, Spanish, and then to really experience what it is like to be on a farm. Every morning, I take him on the ATV with me through the vineyards. You know, we will communicate with the vineyard workers together. You know, he gets a little taste of everything. And you can tell, is soaking this all in and enjoying this much more than sitting in a daycare somewhere in town. So I think it's a terrific experience.
Yeah, he's just not sitting there playing with puzzles or something like that. He's smelling the air. He's getting the taste of, you know, with luck, maybe what he might grow into one day. And even if he doesn't, he's going to have those roots.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the experiences, you know, seeing the vines crawling around in the dirt, I mean, that is really a special experience for him. And, you know, that's very fortunate to be able to do that.
Yeah, you can see it in your face. I think that's pretty cool. It's a great way to be a dad when you can be in nature.
Absolutely. Every morning, we look forward to taking the 10-minute drive up to work and go out to the vineyard together, see the vineyard workers that have been working with my family for, you know, 30 years, and speaking Spanish with them. He's, you know, listening to the Spanish, sees his grandmother and grandfather, speaks or listens to German, no speaking quite yet, but, you know, a good exposure so far.
So in theory, he's going to have that, you know, when he is speaking, he's going to have hopefully the German, he's going to have hopefully the Spanish, and hopefully the English. I mean, wow.
Absolutely, as I did. And, you know, growing up and only speaking German with my mother and father and my sister, and with all of the vineyard workers only speaking Spanish now, and then not learning English until I went to school, it's a wonderful way to grow up and gives you quite an advantage.
Curious, are there any of the vineyard workers that speak some German at all too?
You know, they will joke that it's kind of a German-Spanish combo from speaking to our family for so many years. But, you know, it's interesting. They are embarrassed, even though some of them speak some English, they're embarrassed and uncomfortable to speak Spanish or English with me, just because we have been used to communicating in Spanish with one another for so long.
It's a little bit of an exposure thing almost. It's almost like a pride issue. They're not going to speak it unless they can speak it well.
Right.
One thing about Napa, one thing about wine country, it's its own United Nations, isn't it?
It certainly is. It certainly is. It is one of the most unique growing regions in the world. You know, it attracts people from all over the world.
So you were talking about the fact that you've had this family working for you, for these same people for 30 years. That's really different. I mean, you don't see a lot of that around here. Do you mind expanding on that a bit more?
Certainly. Actually, the family has been working with us since 74, so close to 40 years.
With. That's the big difference. It's not for, but they work with you.
Absolutely. You know, they are more like family than employees. And they are just as passionate about the vineyard as we are. And, you know, the fact that our longest employee now, Pedro, has been with us for 30 years. His father worked here in 1974. His uncle worked here in 74. His nephew works with us now. He's been with us for 20 years. And the fact that it is the same family working with us all this time, as opposed to just a vineyard management company coming in, doing the work, and leaving, really makes a tremendous difference. And they know exactly what we're looking for. They understand the vineyard. They understand the site. And they understand that every year is a little different, whether it be the climate. You know, we need to make adjustments in the vineyard, and they know exactly what needs to be done. And we're very fortunate to have them with us. And they are truly a great group of guys and a lot of fun.
It's a huge advantage, I think, both emotionally to be around people that you feel that way about and you trust, but also intellectually, because they, like you just said, they're the land is in their blood. I mean, they kind of get the feel for where things are going, right?
Absolutely. We get a great feel for where things are going, and they make suggestions. You know, they have their own ideas. They are out looking at each vine throughout the year and understand and see what is happening. And, you know, they take initiative, and that is important. I mean, as we had talked about earlier, you know, they aren't machines. I mean, we need to look at each plant individually, and, you know, they understand that. And therefore, we're very fortunate, you know, to have them and to have them with their experience of so many years of seeing the land and, you know, being here, understanding that each year is very unique.
Yeah,
and, to say the least.
The fact that they, you know, you're probably doing a little bit of thinking for each other as time goes on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So you mentioned, and we talked about this when we were in the vineyard, the whole mechanization of the business. You know, we all see so many ways mechanization is good and where it can be bad, just like computers can be good. I'm asking you about a comparison to some of the mechanization in the business where it becomes cumbersome rather than an advantage. Do you run into that at all?
To be honest, the mechanization that has taken place here through the years, for the most part, we're very pleased with. I'll give you some examples. One of the things that we use now to prune the vineyard are battery-operated pruning shears. And this is a battery on a belt with some shears in your hand that operate at the push of a button. And this really helps in the fact that you have the most experienced pruners out there making the decisive cuts. After that, you have the less experienced guys that will then clean up the vine, remove the prunings, put them on the ground. That works very well. Another successful improvement is the tying machine. And the tying machine looks like a little plastic gun, and this is used to tie the cane to the wire. And, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, we were tying little twisty ties one at a time to tie that cane to the wire. Now we have these little plastic guns with the tying band on a roll, and we could probably, we work, you know, 10 to 15 times as quickly. Other things that we haven't changed, you know, being that we have always farmed organically since 1974, we will not, you know, mechanize that and, you know, spray under the wires with an ATV, which would be a lot more efficient. The weed control is still done a little bit by machine and also by hand. So for the most part, I think that, you know, our goal is to produce high quality wines. We aren't a huge facility, huge production. So I think that, you know, a little more mechanization perhaps, but the goal isn't a lot. It's a 60-acre vineyard. We have six guys that work year-round. During busy seasons, we add a few, but it works very well, and we have a very, very good system as it is now.
To me, it sounds a bit more like horse sense when you make your decision about your technology. Just works.
It just works, right? Exactly. I think it just works, and you have to make certain decisions. I mean, the idea isn't to make everything move faster. I mean, we're still ultimately trying to produce high quality fruit for our wines, and this may just take a little more time, and we can't mechanize everything.
And ultimately, it's Mother Nature, so there's no rushing that, right?
No, definitely no rushing Mother Nature at all.
I like the look on your face. Yeah, Mother Nature.
One thing I want to mention with that is, these shears cost about $2,000 a pair. So these aren't to be handed out to just any employee. And here again, if you have a large scale operation of, a vineyard management company or what have you, where you have people that don't really take care of the equipment, it may not even make financial sense to use them.
Now, I'm trying to wrap my head around this a little bit. If the shears themselves versus whatever they're connected to, if they're power, if they break, are there replaceable parts so it becomes reasonable? So you're not buying a brand new?
No, you're not buying a brand new, but, as the batteries themselves only last, 3 to 4 years, a new battery can be 800. So it's definitely expensive as well.
And progress is always going to be there. Yes, again, you and I were talking comparing to the medical field. There's always going to be changes in this business, and I'm sure there are plenty of people that are willing to part you and your money with all kinds of crazy ideas.
Well, all sorts of suggestions. I get daily emails and calls about the newest, best technology or vineyard equipment, what have you. So always something new. And you need to pay attention. I mean, and perhaps there is something. You don't want to miss something as well. Having been in this business for a lot of years now, you understand at least a certain direction of what potentially makes sense and what doesn't make sense at all.
And I imagine to a great degree you understand when your leg is being pulled.
Yes.
Versus something that's just...
I'd like to think I do.
Well put.
This is the end of part one of our interview with Alex Eisla of Folker Eisla Family Estate. Download part two at lifebetweenthevines.com.